and appreciate you and your staff for being able to work with us and facilitate this meeting today. So hopefully this goes better than my terrible attempt at teleconference that we did a week or so ago. So thank you, all the attendees, panelists, advisors, for joining us tonight. I know this was kind of short notice, but felt like we needed to schedule another check-in, given some of the developments that have happened in terms of the modeling error that took place earlier with some of the materials, and then as well as the update to management objectives. So I hope everybody can see the screen. I put up tonight's agenda. So what I'm what we're planning to do is kind of talk through a little bit of that fishery modeling issue that we had, talk through the management objectives. Since we are hot and heavy in the middle of PFMC and things are developing pretty rapidly, I want to give an update on that as well. Barb sent out and posted three models that we have been working on, kind of culminating all the input that we've heard to date. These aren't agency proposals. They're just trying to take, I think we've got 12 or 15 models that have been sent in. So trying to coalesce that into just a couple of different things to facilitate our discussion. Keep in mind, this isn't a decision-making body. We're not voting for options here. All we're doing is providing input. You folks, in terms of advisors and then the public later, are providing input and feedback to us and fishery suggestions. And we'll take that and look at it against our management objectives that we discussed earlier in the year, and I'll provide an update on. So after that, we've got about an hour and 15 minutes where we can have just discussion about different fishery packages. There's a few specific things I'd like to get some input on this evening. Set aside the last 15 minutes like we always do for public input, and then we'll try and adjourn right at 8 o'clock. Start on time and try to end on time. Be respectful of everybody's time. So any questions about any of that? Okay, I'm not hearing any, so I'm gonna jump right in. And the first thing I'm gonna do is talk a little bit about the PFMC update. So PFMC this year is quite interesting, challenging from a variety of different perspectives. First off, for the non-treaty proposals, those have been coalesced into one option that was put forth in front of the council and will be part of the modeling that you see later this evening. In terms of Chinook, what was put forth was 55,000 non-treaty TAC, or total allowable catch. How that relates to the options that we talked about earlier in the year, that is the middle point between the high and the low option. For non-treaty coho, what was put in front of the council yesterday and is represented in the modeling that you'll see tonight is a 35,000 TAC, or total allowable catch, for non-treaty. And that is the high option. From the options that we discussed earlier in the year. Just real quickly, for those of you who may be interested in what that recreational proposal is for Marine Area 2, it would be for a recreational fishery to run from June 20th through September 30th. In the time frame of June 20th through June 28th, the first week basically, it would be a 7-day-a-week fishery with a one adult daily limit and release coho. So you could harvest a Chinook or a chum in that fishery. And then beginning on June 29th, the fishery would transition to a 5-day-a-week. Sunday through Thursday, the fishery would be open or closed on Friday and Saturdays. The bag limit is 2 salmon daily. Only one may be a Chinook, and mark selective for coho. So what's kind of interesting this year, and we're a little bit farther behind than we normally would be, is the treaty, the treaty troll proposal. Right now, we have not the treaty tribes have not coalesced all their options down into one singular option. So they have basically six options on the table: a high, mid, and a low, utilizing one paradigm, and a high, mid, and low using another paradigm. Long story short, you look at all six of those options, they range from a treaty troll harvest impact on coho of 30,000 down to zero. And there's a bunch of steps there in between. And then for Chinook, it would be 45,000 down to 20,000 with, once again, a few steps in between. So what that means for us is we don't have a real good sense right at this point in time about what the terminal coho run size would be like we normally would. So how that kind of reflects itself in our modeling exercise or what the range of across the bar terminal coho, natural coho forecast would be. We're looking at anywhere between 15,819, given that high option, inclusive of the 35,000 non-treaty proposal that's on the table, up to as high as 16,320. What we're using in our modeling that we'll show tonight is similar to what we've done. We're using in the kind of lower range of proposals, the middle option, which sets our terminal natural coho forecast at 15,964. The idea with that is I'd rather start off, at least from our work, with a lower number and be able to add than, you know, all this is supposed to culminate Thursday with a package in front of the council. And having to cut at the last minute, I think it's always better to be able to add than to have to shape fisheries in the last few hours. So, with that, the last thing I really want to say about that is we sent out a link through our North of Falcon website webpage on our WDFW website. There is a meeting schedule page. There, if you scroll down to the April 4th through April 10th commission meeting, there's a link to all the P-Council meetings and the P-Council website. P-Council.org is the PFMC website. Sorry about the jargon there. If you scroll down on that page, you can see that there's a box for public comment to comment on salmon actions or groundfish or any of the other actions in front of the council this week. It quickly pulls up a little card that you can fill out some information and be able to get your comment into onto the council floor. So with that, I'll take a break real quick. Any questions about that?
This is Ross. Did you say no coho until when? June 29th in the Bay for Rex?
In the Bay, that's the ocean, Ross. Yeah, the proposal that's for Marine Area 2 right now would not open up coho retention until June 29th. From the 20th to the 28th, it would just be a one fish bag, just a Chinook or a Chum.
Okay, the one Chinook after the 29th had to be clipped?
No, this is for the ocean, Ross. This is not, well.
Oh, okay. You're just giving the ocean seat.
This is for Marine Area 2. Keep in mind, the bay is managed under Marine Area 2 rules until, we typically move into our 2-2 rules August 1st.
Yes, I know.
Regulations would be.
And so what you're saying in the ocean. What you're saying is in the ocean, there's going to be no coho retention until June 29th?
June 29th, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the ocean would open.
I hadn't heard that.
Okay.
The ocean would be open, but not for coho.
Not for coho for the first week, yes.
Gotcha.
Yep. Okay, any other questions? Okay, if there's not any questions about that, I think the first thing we'll talk about, and I know hopefully everybody saw the email traffic over the weekend, had a couple of questions about what the error actually was. Tried to explain that the best I could without getting too jargony there. Basically, the harvest rates, if for recreational freshwater, were miscalculated. It was just a simple cell reference error. When those harvest rates are calculated, it's the they're calculated individually for each year. In this case, 2015 through 2018, and they should be the harvest that occurred in that year divided by the run size for that aggregate area. Remember, in our modeling and what we do is we're not able to do Willapa specifically and North River specifically. Those areas are aggregated. So it's the run size of Willapa North that would be the divisor in that calculation. What was wrong was the divisor was actually the run size, the terminal run size across the bay of all the aggregate errors areas, making that harvest rate a lot less than what it should be. So when we were reviewing the models, we caught the error. Staff worked really hard last week. We got all the materials updated, and what we'll be presenting tonight, we'll have that fix in place. So apologize for that. I know it's not a great place to be, but we're human too. Big models, lots of errors, lots of cells, lots of formulas, we got it corrected. So I don't want to spend too much time on that. Any questions about any of that?
Hey, Chad, this is Bob. Can you hear me now?
Yep, I can hear you.
Well, I turned around. I got muted. I finally got, she unmuted me. But I got a question on the Willapa coho impacts in the ocean and Willapa Bay fisheries. And I got the sheet I got that was sent to me, and it goes unmarked wild down in Brookings Port and all the way to the Oregon coast and all that. How in the devil do they tally a number for an unmarked coho when there's no mark, there's no tags or nothing on it? Is it a guesstimation or just what is it?
Bob, we use the CWT programs that are in place for the Willapa hatchery coho are used as surrogate information for wild coho exploitation in pre-terminal areas. So the assumption is that the Willapa Bay hatchery coho and Willapa Bay natural coho inhibit the same time and space out in the ocean in those pre-terminal areas. And then so that exploitation is calculated by looking at the actual abundance against those exploitation rates or those AEQ mortalities, adult equivalent mortalities that occur in the pre-terminal areas.
Well, the sheet that I shows me here, it only gives us Washington coast down to Oregon and that. There's nothing for Canada or Alaska on here.
I'm not sure what you're looking at, Bob.
That's what Butch Smith sent me. So
okay. We'll have to circle back.
I tried to call you guys today and couldn't get a hold of nobody. So
we're not in our offices, Bob. You got to call us on our cell phones.
Well, I tried calling Barb on hers, so okay. She never got back to me. So
you're a little swamped right now. I apologize if you weren't able to get a hold of anybody, but we can circle back with this at another time. If that's all right.
Well, being we have such a dire strait with natural coho, I can't quite understand why we're having such vibrant coho fisheries in the ocean.
Okay, Bob, but we're here to talk about fisheries in the estuary. That's the focus tonight. understand, you know, you're free to follow some of those Peak Council links and provide that input in those forums, as well as provide the public comment to the council itself. But, you know, tonight I'm here to talk about Willapa fisheries, bud.
Well, another thing, I tried to get onto the council website to find the three options, and I couldn't find them anywhere.
Okay, well, we'll circle back with you and get you those links, Bob, so you can take a look at that. I've got a link I'll send you after the meeting.
Okay, thanks.
I'll send it to everyone. Any questions about the harvest rates or any of that?
Chad, this is Tim Hamilton. I just want to confirm that you can hear me.
I can hear you, Tim. Okay, so real quickly, I want to step into the management objectives. The management objectives that we're using in evaluating fishery proposals and suggestions and what we're using to shape and scope our fisheries. Obviously, with the interim guidance that we've received from the commission, we're looking for a no greater than a 10% impact rate cap to chum stocks in Willapa Bay. That's been the same throughout the process. For natural origin coho, we're managing two escapements, so that 13,600 number. I will just put in a caveat here that the goal in terms of the council processes or what PFMC considers the Willapa Bay escapement goal is 17,200, and that is naturally spawning coho. So coho made up of both wild and hatchery origins, that's the goal that the council is using to evaluate fishery packages. Different from our management objective here internally of 13,600 natural origin coho. I think,
Chad?
Yeah.
This is Dana, I'm sorry. I'm not sure if you want to share another document now. We're currently seeing the agenda. So just
No, Barb will get to this in just a minute.
Got it, okay.
That'll be on the
just wanted
document.
To make sure, okay.
No, thank you, Dana. And then for Chinook stocks, we've talked about throughout the process that we would manage to a 14% aggregate impact rate cap on unmarked Chinook. We've gone back, reviewed all the audio, reviewed all the commission documents, files, the motions that have been put in place, listened to a lot of testimony and everything else. We are in error. That is not the correct. Our interpretation was wrong. We will be, our management objective will be a 14% impact rate cap to Willapa River and Nacelle River unmarked stocks. So made that change early last week, and that's how we'll look at the boxes, as it were, green or red, in the models that Barb will get to. So the three models that we sent out earlier, I'm going to turn it over to Barb here, and she's going to walk through what they are. Keep in mind, folks, these aren't agency proposals. These aren't for us to vote on or anything like that. They're just kind of trying to take a look at all the comment that we've received today and coalesce them into a few options that make it easier for us to talk about here in the 2 hours that we've got in front of us. So with that, I'll turn it over to Barbara. Thank you.
Chad, I had one question. You didn't mention an impact rate limit on the Nema River.
There is not an impact
rate right?
limit to the Nema River.
There is no impact rate limit on the Nema. Okay.
No, it's just to Willapa River and Nacelle River stocks.
I see.
Okay. Go ahead, Barb.
Okay. I'm going to try and share my screen here. Can everyone see that? That is actually looking at a monitor.
Yes, we can see that.
Okay.
So, this is Marlisa, and I cannot see it because I cannot get your link to work. Can someone shoot me a separate email with those models on it?
Marlisa, do you have access to the website? Our website?
Marlisa, these
yes.
are posted on the Willoughby Bay Salmon Advisory Group meeting materials for tonight. So if you're able to access the internet, you can navigate to that page and see the same thing that we're showing on the screen.
So is this A through J?
No, it's B, K, and M.
Okay, well, I thought I had that. So it says model runs. April 6th at the meeting, and I'm looking here, it says agenda model runs and model run summary. That's all that's on here.
On the website?
Mm-hmm.
On the website, there.
Click it.
I did.
There's two model runs. There was one that was posted last week and a summary, and then there was one that's dated today. You'll see as of April 6th. And a summary. I'm just going to be looking at the summary.
All right, I will open up the summary. It says region, let's see, April 6th here. Okay, let me pull up the summary. And it has A through J. And this is off your website.
Skip down a line.
I still see an A through J. Let's see. Let me go back. The other option is to join the webinar, but it's not working here. So,
Marlisa, you need to log all the way out and log back in and refresh your internet browser. The models are posted on the website. I'm able to access and look at them right now. It should say. Barb just posted them at 4:00. So if you had that website open earlier, you're looking at an earlier version since she updated. Right there in meeting materials, it says model runs B, K, and M as of 04/06/2020. Okay, go ahead, move on, Barb.
Okay, so for everyone's benefit, I'm just gonna be looking at the summary of those three models. Which I have up on the screen, but if you don't have it or you're just looking at your computer, that's the version I'm looking at. So I'm going to start with model B here. Model B is the model that you guys have seen before. It is the same model B that we showed last week. The only difference in this model is that we changed some of the commercial fishery days in order to make all the boxes basically green. So in this model, this is a two fish bag model, both for the freshwater and the marine fishery. There is no, it's got a release of unmarked Chinook and a release of unmarked coho as well. In this model, the fishery paradigm in terms of seasons and dates and all of that for the freshwater fisheries are all the same as they were last year. The commercial fishery, in this fishery, they use tangle nets for prior to September 13th, and chum fishing would be allowed the entire season. So in this model, the Willapa rate is 13.2, the nacelle rate is 13.9, and the impacts for a chum are 6.9. You've got a NOR Chinook escapement at 2533, a coho at 13,626, which is just over the goal, and a 38,000 in chum escapement. So in terms of allocation, we've got just over 9,000 Chinook for the rec fishery and almost 1,500 for the commercial fishery. And for coho, we've got 6,500 in the rec fishery and 5,400 in the commercial fishery. And the number of days scheduled for the commercial fishery is 19. So for model
Barbara,
K,
you said, Barbara, yes. You said the start days are the same as last year. I don't have last year memorized. So what start days are we talking about here?
Yeah, whatever the seasons were last year, they weren't changed in that model in terms of sections opened and what days they were.
Well, how in the heck are we supposed to remember what it was last year? Why don't you just tell us?
It's kind of a long list, Ross.
Hold on a second. Ross, we've got the actual schedules. We'll be looking at those in just a second. Barb's just trying to run through a quick summary. So let's just try and get through that, and then we can look at the actual schedules. What she means to say is none of these commercial schedules starts prior to Labor Day. So let's just let her get through the summary here, and then we can get into the actual models.
Okay, so for Model K, Model K is a model that we put together based on some of the comments that we heard last week during our conference call in terms of systems without hatchery production, as well as some time and area limits. So this model actually has a 2 fish bag limit in the marine area and just a release of unmarked Chinook. And in the freshwater, it's a 1 fish bag except for the Nemo where there's a 2 fish bag set. There's no natural coho retention and it's a release of unmarked Chinook. And obviously chum can be kept. In this model, North River, Smith Creek, Bear River, and the section in Nacelle River from Highway 4 to the hatchery would be closed to salmon fishing. The South Fork Willapaw River and the Nemo Rivers, but all middle, north, and south, would all close as of October 1. And in this model, the commercial fishery, 2U, would be using tangle nets for the entire season of September and October. And any openers prior to September 13th would also use tangle nets. And the commercial fishery would be allowed to retain chum the entire season. So based on that, that model has an 11.9 Willapaw River impact rate. It has a 13.9 on nacelle and an 8.1 on chum impacts. The Chinook escapement is expected to be almost 2,600. The coho escapement is expected to be just over the 13,600 at 13,613. And the total chum escapement is expected to be almost 38,000 or 38,000 or 37,500, I'm sorry. In terms of allocation, you've got 7,800 going to the wreck Chinook. You've got commercial at 2,200 Chinook. Coho, almost 4,900 coho to the wreck side and 6,400 to the commercial side. And in this schedule, the commercial fishery has 21 days. So for the last model, this model is exactly like Model B, except that it's a 1 fish bag. So the B was 2 fish, this one's 1 fish. You'd be releasing unmarked Chinook and unmarked coho in both the, in the freshwater as well. And in the commercial fishery, it's the same paradigm of 2U would have tangle net through September, October, and anything scheduled before September 13th would use tangle net as well. So for that data, we've got a 9.5 in the Willapaw River impact rate for natural Chinook, 12.8 for nacelle, and a 9.5 for chum impacts. We're just over 2,600 for the NOR Chinook escapement, just over 13,600 for the natural origin coho, and almost 37,000 for chum escapement. In terms of allocation, you've got just about 4,800 for the rec side on Chinook, almost 2,800 for the commercial side. Coho, rec would have 27, it's projected to get 2,700, and the commercial's at almost 8,600. And in this schedule, the commercial fishery has about 25 days. So I think I will turn back over to Chad. There you go.
Yep, thank you, Barb. So folks, thanks for running through all that, Barb. I know we're trying to adjust to a new technology and a new way of doing things. We do have all the models and the fishery summaries, so I can go through those and show everybody what they look like in terms of schedules, commercial schedules, all that sort of stuff. A couple of things that specifically like to have some additional conversation on. Relative to, I believe it is Model K. Model K is, we talked a lot at the last advisory group meeting about recreational fisheries and areas that did not have hatcheries or hatchery production in them, specifically for coho, and taking a look at using time and area closures in order to use our impacts, our limited natural origin coho and Chinook impacts in ways to leverage opportunity for hatchery fish. So you'll notice that Barb mentioned, as we discussed, areas like South Fork Willapa, Middle Fork Nema, South Fork Nema, where we did dive into the CRC data, and there is some hatchery harvest in those areas, significantly more than what you see in North River or Smith Creek or areas like Bear River. So this model run kept those areas open until we saw that Chinook were pretty much had cleared the area, and we were just starting to get into impacts to coho. So that's a look at kind of what we discussed at the last meeting. So I want to take some input from you folks on that and have you be able to see a model and what that looks like. The other two are just basically a two fish rec package across the bay. That would be model B with a commercial schedule that meets, turns all the boxes green, as it were. And model M is same sort of paradigm with a one fish rec bag across all the areas. Both the B and M runs are all areas open. So they don't have, you know, North River, Smith Creek, Bear River, places like that closed. So I have those models here, and we can go ahead and pull them up on the screen. I guess I'll just turn it over to advisors now. Oh, the other thing I really want to take some input tonight on, as we'll see, and I'll just, for instance, model B here. Just give me 1 second. Share. Okay, can everybody see that screen?
Yes.
Okay. So this is the fishery summary page, and I'll remind everybody that all these fishery summaries from these model runs are posted on the Willapa Bay Salmon Advisory Group page. So don't feel like, you know, this is your only opportunity. You can review some of those models and get your input into us. We still got a ways to go here before we get to a final 103 package. But commercial schedule starting here in week 37 in model run B.
Hey, Chad, I didn't interrupt you here, but
yeah,
to make it easier on everybody, could you just give us say week 37?
Yeah.
Just so everybody can follow. Can you give a date on that?
Yeah, week 37 here. Can you guys see that? Do I need to make this bigger on my
screen? Okay. No, I get it. I see it now. Okay. We're good.
So I just want to remind everybody, Labor Day this year is September 7th. So every one of these models has a commercial fishery starting later than Labor Day. And then the other thing I want to get some input on specifically from the commercial sector is the November fishery. And how we might schedule this, you know, normal versus late time coho, a lot of natural coho impact here that might be better leveraged up above. But want to hear some input on that. So with that, I'll turn it over to you.
Hey, this is Francis. Can you actually back up to Barb's little summary again?
Yeah, I can. Just give me 1 second. I got to stop sharing and pull that up.
Just a quick big picture observation.
Yep, not a problem. Here we go. Okay. You want this?
So you said M was basically B, except that we took the rec fishery and made it a one fish bag.
Yep. The model run B is two fish everywhere. Model M is one fish.
Okay, go back to that other back up. Okay. So how is it that if we ratchet down the rec fishery, I take it back. I was looking on the wrong thing. I was looking at escapement goal. That wasn't catch. I see it now. I'll take it back. This is an error on my part.
We're throwing a lot of information at you here pretty quick.
It is.
Yeah.
Looking at the wrong column.
No, you're okay.
This is Tim. Can I get a moment?
Absolutely, Tim.
Okay. If I remember correctly, if you would go back to, can you bring up, we can use the BK&M. Okay. When I created option H, mm-hmm. Before you made the corrections to the model, it showed 49.64 for the recreational harvest. Yep. Didn't change anything, but you guys changed the way you calculated it, and it jumped from 49.64 to 98. That is a remarkable jump. That is like the previous models were absolute garbage. Then we come back with Model K. Take it back. Can you take me back there?
Yeah, I can go to Model K.
Go to the summary page.
Okay. Just a second. I need to share it.
Are you putting it up? Okay.
I'm getting there. Just give me one second. I got to navigate through a few things here to be
sure.
Model run K. Share screen. There. Okay.
Summary.
This is the fishery summary page.
Yes. Go to the summary table.
Oh, you mean on this tab?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, you gonna do it there instead of the table? That's fine.
Well, it was on the table. Here's the table.
Okay, so here we go. When we go from a 2-bag limit to a 1-bag limit, the recreational harvest drops from 9,118 to 4,806. I don't know where you got that percentage number you stuffed in there, but that's greater than the numbers I see from going from a 4-bag limit to 1. How in the world do you justify an argument that going from a 2-bag limit to a 1-bag limit will free up nearly 5,000 fish for the nets? How do you do that?
Right here. So if you can see up above, these are the calculated savings from CRC when you move from a 2-fish bag to a 1-fish limit. So I don't, right?
I don't see any 2-fish where I see 4-fish.
It's, so those are the proportions of people when we jump from a 4-fish bag to a 3-fish, 2-fish to a 1-fish, 1-fish to a 2-fish. So,
okay, Chad, I'm gonna be pretty short tonight. These models are not reliable enough to use for any fashion whatsoever. Go take the net days of the season out of all your options, delete the nets entirely, and it shows no change in recreational, fresh or marine water. None. Now, if you think, then you could turn around and do what I did. I put 7 days a week in for the nets in every zone from August 1st forward, and it didn't show any decline in the wrecks. This is absolutely not reliable. I understand how difficult a job you guys got. But with that being said, I'd like to have someone tell me that you could put 7 days a week of nets and 2T and 2U, 2M and 2N from August 1st on, and the fisheries for the wrecks would be the same. Who would agree with that?
Thanks for the comment, Tim. These models are not interactive. They don't function in terms of reductions from one fishery to the next impacting the other. They look at the simple harvest rate calculations against the total run size using recent year data to extrapolate or estimate harvest moving forward.
This, Chad,
the models that you're discussing are not not able. We're not able to run those in an Excel format. Those would require much more sophisticated tools than what we have available to us.
Okay, so what you're telling me is that we're going to go forward, Some of these models push it right to the wire of 14% when we've only got 31% of the escapement goal coming across the bar in the cell. We'll push it right to 14% being there. And you can't tell within 200% of what the impacts are going to be. It doesn't bother me that it is how the flaws in it, how the flaws are created. What bothers me is that this is not an accurate way for us to predict when we've got such few fish. It's not like we got a slop room here of all holy hell. We ain't got none. So with all respect for you guys, it is totally unreliable. You cannot use one of these predictions. I mean, when you have a model that says we're going to put 40 nets, if you want, full pressure, 2T, 2U, from August 1st to November 1st, and it won't affect the wrecks, what do you think the allocation battle was? The times of the frame, getting the poles in front of the nets or the nets in front of the pole. Oh, you're asking us to deny the whole reason this discussion and this controversy ever existed. And that is just not any standard that I can swallow. I just can't do it. And with that, I'll tell you that there is no way that I feel that this department in conscience can go forward and push the limit on these harvest rates with all the expectation in the world we're going to blow it again. I don't see how you guys do that. I don't view.
Hey, James here. I'd be happy to say something if now's a good time. So you bring up a really good point about a limitation with the models, and Chad just mentioned that previously. So I'm taking notes here. Jody and Barb and Chad and I have all discussed ways to improve these models. I will add that this fact that the commercial fisheries are not linked to the sport fisheries, so that they're not, their harvest or allocation isn't weighted one way or the other, is consistent with a similar issue we have in places where we co-manage with the tribes, where we change a tribal schedule and we don't have a perceived savings or increase in the sport fishery. So this is a problem. It is a limitation of this model and other models that we use throughout the state. So I just say it's at the top of the list of things to fix. Probably isn't going to happen in the next 3 days, but I appreciate the comment and I mean that. So thanks.
Well, it's thank you for your comments, and I understand. I'm trying to respect the fact that this is not an easy job to do. But by the same token, if you came out on TV tonight with this model and explained it on the COVID-19 the COVID-19 issue, someone would be hung. There's no standard for this to continue on. It's not something the department doesn't know about. I raised this issue to them 5 years ago. Okay. And when you get down to this low account and you're turning a box green and you're going to fish to the last fish, it would be something else if there was a buffer in the preseason forecast. If we ran fisheries with the caution that is being used elsewhere as a normal principle of management, that would be one thing. We aren't. The minute you go to the attitude which these models you're now showing, it's not a big surprise that this happened. I'm not surprised about this at all. Once you guys lost the 16 or the 14% aggregate misinterpretation, not surprised at all that this happened to us. But when you create a one fish bag limit that shows a reduction of 4,000 fish, that is incredulous. But it's worse than that, because those 4,000 paper fish are now used to extend net days. There's only one reason to go to a one bag limit, and everybody knows it. So this model will allow you to increase the season for nets. There's no other function that accomplishes at all. And you show it right in your own model. And man, you guys are about to burn the nacelle to the ground. And I don't know how any of you can go forth with these things that you're seeing on the screen. You say that they're not yours. Well, I don't know who they belong to, but I know one thing. You're going to gut that bay again. And when we have no fish, and go do the X vessel value difference between a one-bag limit and two-bag limit. My God, you're talking $30 or $40 a fisherman. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? It makes no sense.
Hey, so James, again, just since I spoke last, I think I'll just say, so I noted that there's an imperfection in the model that you're interested in and that you're not supportive of a model that reduces the bag limit from 2 to 1. And so, you know, based on a technical issue. So yeah, thanks for that. And I got it noted and I'm sure the other folks on the team do too. So thanks.
Hey, this is Francis. Conceptually, I would agree with Tim that, you know, we're tempting fate on a run size that we already know isn't going to be meeting escapement on Chinook. And so I would revisit some of this stuff and try to be a little more conservative and not push those exploitation rates all the way up as close to the 14 as we can get them, because we historically have overfished. I mean, I don't think other parts of this model have changed. It's the same point I made before. This model typically produces postseason results that are 30% higher than what was predicted. And we seem to make no, I'm not sure why we can't make up ground on that as new information that is always fed into the model. The other thing I want to say is that on the coho side, I do have extreme concerns about coho escapements being managed, I mean, even more down to the wire. I mean, a handful of fish. I mean, all those things we saw are, you know, a couple dozen, 50 extra coho. I don't think we have that kind of surgical precision. And I think everyone here would agree with me that, you know, we're not operating with a surgical scalpel. It's more akin to a butter knife, okay? And I'll end with that. I'll mute myself.
This is Ross. When I don't have time to study something, I look for things that defy your intuition. And kind of along the lines the last two folks said, I'm looking at escapement. And as the from B to M, as the wreck harvest goes from 9,000 to 4,800, and as the commercial harvest goes from 1,400 to 2,800, okay, and you look at escapement, okay, and you're shifting thousands of fish to the nets, and the escapement goes up. And when you're taking fish away from a fishery with a 14% mortality rate and moving it over where it's triple, that doesn't work. That's another quality control question that says there's something wrong here. And I have to agree with what Tim and said, is that, you know, there's really a credibility issue here. The other thing is that you don't list escapement by river. So the question is, are you managing for escapement by river? That's my question.
Yeah, I can answer that, Ross. We do manage to escapement for Chinook to Willapa River and Nacelle River, North River as well.
Okay, so what is the escapement to the Nacelle going to be for these three options?
102.
Chinook. Say again?
It's 502 in this option. Whichever one I got open, I can't see which one I got open.
Yeah.
B. You can see that on the model summary pages that are all posted to the Willapa Bay Advisory Group page. If you look at the fishery summary tab.
Well, I'm not able to shift from the summary over to those. I just can't do it for some reason.
All the models model that we've produced so far this year. I just want to folks, these are, once again, not agency proposals. These three models are comments that we have heard through the advisory group and through the public process, as well as, in the case of Model K, discussions that we had at the last meeting.
Yeah, I got that part on K before. I got that part.
Okay.
So the escapement last year in the NASEL was 479 or something, and the one you quoted here is 502.
Yes.
And that just doesn't smell like managing for escapement in the NASEL River.
Ross, our management objective for the NASEL River is to limit the impact to 14% of unmarked Chinook. That's the management objective for the NASEL River.
Okay, I understand. You're not managing to improve escapement in the NASEL River.
The policy was put in place that limiting exploitation within the terminal area to 14% would result in making escapement after 16 to 21 years. Ross, we've talked about this for years. The policy was never intended to put into place to make escapement in the first few years. We don't get enough fish across the bulk. That's the genesis of the harvest control rule of 14%. The modeling, you were part of the ad hoc group that developed this policy. The policy was put into place to limit harvest from 16 to 21 years to a 14% impact with the intention being that if we limited the amount of harvest that we had, that these stocks would rebuild and we would begin making escapement after 16 to 21 years.
Well, and I remember also in the policy, it said that if you over-harvest, there is payback, and you don't do that. And after 5 years, you would expect to see some results. And the modeling for the policy showed results. And the only results we have is the escapement's gone down. It's not working, and it's a credibility issue. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for your comment, Ross. I see we've got
Bob,
Andy, Greg. Oh, Marlisa has her hand up. Go ahead, Marlisa.
Thank you for letting me speak. I want to thank Mara for shooting me the copies so I can look at them as we're talking about it. Thank you, Mara. I want to start by saying that from the beginning, we knew that it was going to be difficult to craft a commercial season with less impacts coming over the bar than we needed to get the job done to start with. And I am disappointed in the department right now because it seems as though there's been some magic numbers floating around and a model that we can't get to fully function. And I don't know that any business meeting or company would allow this kind of accounting to take place. Nowhere in any company would it happen. I want to move on and talk about a couple of things that I feel are really important right now. I think that we need to visit what Chinook are about for the recreational people and about conservation. So right off the bat, I want to say conservation is important. And harvesting up to the line at 14%, 13.9%, I'm not comfortable with that. We have been mismanaging our impacts for decades, and if we hadn't, we wouldn't be in this position. I haven't mismanaged it, but you have, and your predecessors have, and it's time that we do something about it. And although it's not talked about, where's our percentage for conservation? There should be a percentage for conservation on this, not just 13.9, because we can do it. What about 2 to 5% of that 13.9 for conservation right out of the gate? You know, where is that common sense? You know, Canada certainly participates in that way, and they have an upward trajectory with their fish runs. And the last thing I want to say, I do want to thank you for an opportunity to speak and bringing some of these options for us to look at. But honestly, the department's credibility has been in the toilet for the last couple of years because of moves like this, you know, bringing results out of thin air that you can't prove or disprove. It's really hard. It's hard to look at this and wonder why, how in the world that you could float this, you know, 7 day a week season, 5 day a week season, and put them in early, the Nets, and not show a change in the recreational consumption. I know for a fact, and so does every commercial fisherman out there, that it's a buildup fishery. And if you go in on September 8th and go in for 3 days and 2M and 2N, you will empty out the south end of the bay, and there will be nothing coming up into fresh water for the next week to 10 days until there's a rain, or unless there's a rain, and then they'll have another surge that will come forward. So just to clarify, a meaningful recreational fishery should be a full bag, and a full bag starts at 2 fish for the season, unless there isn't enough fish. I don't think that means that you should reduce recreational Chinook fisheries to 1 bag to free up impacts to give to the net. I could understand and I could support giving up fish if I knew that those were going to go for conservation needs, but that's not what is happening here. Without making changes or your magic numbers, you cannot put those nets in prior to September 16th. Just can't do it. So I'm anxious to see where your selection ends. Thank you. I'm going to put myself on mute.
I don't know if my phone's working, but I'll go whenever you want.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Marlisa. Yeah, no, I hear you. One thing I'd like to make sure we get some comments on from the commercial sector is about the November fishery here.
Am I working, Chad?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Lance. I'd probably got about 15 things I'd like to say, but I'm disappointed that when we come out and say this, the commercial fishery in that early September fishery is going to wipe it out. I wish you would come forward and say what we've caught, you know, over the past few years with it, because it's very dismal. But having said that, back to the beginning of it, I played around with the model a little bit, and I don't see where I think we've gotten to the point where we need to do our November fishery needs to be cut out. Just take it out of the commercial deal, because last year where our escapement goal was our prediction was lower, and we didn't fish on it. I think we did the same thing a couple of years ago. We closed it, and it's disappointing to me that we put down things like 19 days or 25 days for the commercial fishery, when we know we're not going to fish those days. So I'd like you just to scrap all of November for the commercial fishery. It's my personal feeling. I'd like to see you scrap the prior to the September 15th for the commercial fishery. And I would like to see you go no more than 2 days a week from September 15th to October 1st. And I want those days to be run on the same day. I want those not to be like fish 2 days here, 2 days there. I'd like them to be fish Monday, fish Wednesday for a season. I ran the model out. Everything comes out good. You might end up with a handful more fish. You could get a 2 fish bag. So that's kind of what I looked at there for the fishery. So that's what I'd like to see.
Thanks, Lance. I'm just taking some notes here. Can I make sure? And you said cut out the November fishery and then 2 days a week from what was September 15th through what?
Well, I guess it's September 13th it starts, but I think we can't fish a regular net till the 15th. So I guess it's the week starts, stat week starts 13th, but I think we can squeeze it in there and get, you know, silver net on the 15th, you know, get 2 days a week, whatever that week starts. I guess the 15th must be about Tuesday or something. So if we go like Tuesday, Thursday that week, and then maybe like Monday, Wednesday the next week for all areas on the same day. So I think we can cut this down to where we can get a much bigger bag limit on the November fishery. Save some coho. I mean, we need to cut some stuff out of our fishery here to make sure we get a full fishery, I think.
Okay, so you said,
hey, Lance, this is Francis. Thanks for that pragmatic input.
Hold on just a second. I'm trying to capture this. 2 days a week from 38 to 42. Is that what you're telling me?
Let me put my glasses back on here. Hold on one second, Chad. Yeah, that's correct. No, that's not correct. 38 to 41, Chad.
Okay, and then not fishing in week 42.
Yeah, if you go 2 days a week there, cut out that October 11th, 17th, that 42, cut that, those days. Yeah, and then cut out all of the November time. Like I think it's kind of ridiculous for us to think we're going to fish in November, and we put the days down, and it looks good on paper that we're going to have 25 or 28 days, but I just think, for all honesty, with the run you've got predicted, which you can't help, we should cut all those days out, that stat week 46 to 48. That's just my feeling on it. It frees up a handful more coho. And if we get a two fish bag on that for the wreck fisherman, I think that would be much better to get a full bag limit.
Thank you, Lance.
Yep. I'm out.
I haven't heard from Greg or Andy or Bob or Norm or Mara. I'll just go through the list here. Andy, you got any? Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, Chad.
Yeah, go ahead, Andy.
Chad, you got? Yeah. I think once again, I think one of the problems here is, I think maybe the model missed this, and maybe again in the last week, the only place we can save on fish is in the commercial fishery. That's what I'm hearing from a lot of people. I find that difficult. I find it difficult that some advisors, some rec advisors, are okay to continue in other areas with red boxes, but when we get to the Willapaw, oh my God, that's not going to happen. So I think where we're moving with is some of the people are really having problems with the 14% constraint. So I think some people didn't realize that maybe it was going to affect both sectors of the fishery. And for one person to say, how can there be enough fish for them, but there's not enough fish for the other group? That's I could say, well, I just don't see it. There's enough fish for the wreck fishery. You know, it's this mentality of, we just don't want you there. And that's what makes the advisory group difficult, because the other group is just trying to get rid of us. They just don't want us there. So we can look at all the models we want tonight, and the only rational model is to say, we don't fish. And some other advisors have said, we're having a hard time even going to get them across the bar. So once again, is somebody saying we should just close the season for everybody? I don't know. As far as the models on the table for tonight go, I really don't like any of them. And as far as the November fishery goes, you know, if we're there to save natural coho, and nobody's keeping natural coho in November, right? If it gets us some time earlier, we can cut that down pretty good. That's all I got to say for tonight.
Hey, Chad, I don't know if I go one more time real quick on something I wanted to mention.
Yeah, go ahead. Then I need to get
right, to right. That's something that slipped my mind because it's not real clear anymore. But I was wondering if you put a placeholder in this thing, God forbid COVID-19 still exists and the recreational fishery has been deemed not a priority, basically, and the commercial fishery has by our governor, if there's any kind of a placeholder you put into north of Falcon that those impacts, given there won't be, if there is, if this thing does carry on, which somebody might know if it will or not, but it basically, if we can model a fishery that we can use those impacts in our fishery, if we can't have a wreck fishery, but just a crazy thought for you.
No, thank you for that, Lance. You know, right now, what we know is we've got a stay home, stay healthy order until May 4th. We're progressing through north of Falcon as if we're going to fish in the fall. And if things change, we'll have to cross that bridge when we come to it. We're optimistic that, you know, we're going to make it through this thing and we'll be back to normal by the fall. So I still got a couple advisors. I don't know, Mara, are you able to get on yet?
Yep. Okay. So two thoughts to share here. One is that I am not a fan of model or option K. I mean, it doesn't have anything to do with the numbers. It has to do with how the fishing in some rivers, but not others. And I think I mentioned this last time. And if, you know, somebody, my concern is that it's not equitable to the folks that are fishing in the rivers that are being closed, understanding that that is a catch and release fishery for them. And that, unless they get a stray hatchery fish, I do understand that. I just, philosophically, that would not be my choice. In terms of the other piece that we've been talking about this evening, I would very much support some kind of a conservation buffer here, particularly because of the many uncertainties involved with the model and the numbers. I understand that's not built into the policy, which makes it, you know, additionally challenging. But in terms of the direction the conversation has gone, I just wanted to sort of voice my support for some sort of a buffer or an approach here that doesn't get us right to a model that doesn't get us right to the wire, either in terms of the exploitation rate for our impact rate for Chinook or the escape or impact rate for Chinook or Chum and or the escapement for Coho. So those are my thoughts to share.
Thank you, Mara. Let's see, we still have Norm. Norm, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, a couple things. One.
I can't hardly hear Norm. Have him get closer to
you. Can you hear me now? Is that better?
We can hear you. You're a little faint, but we can hear you.
Okay. In terms of this conversation about a buffer zone, it's not in the policy. What I'm seeing here meets the intent of the policy. So I'm not going to argue that either way. If we were to decide in the future to place some type of a buffer in there, that buffer should be done equitably. It should not come out of any one sector's hide. It needs to be fairly done. To go back to the COVID situation, I've been following it very closely for my own personal reasons. We just had a WDFW announcement come out today, closing the beaches, well, closing everything through May 4th. The experts that I'm listening to, and I do have a little bit of background in preventive medicine, I can foresee a situation occurring later in the year where we could be in the same situation, where we're all told to shelter in place. If that is the case, and if the recreational fleet is not on the water, I would like to see at least a significant portion or a part of the portion of the recreational allocation go to conservation. I don't have a problem with harvesting some of those fish commercially, but I do have a suggestion as to take part of that recreational allocation and allowing it by putting more fish into the rivers. As far as closing one river and opening another, I live in Puget Sound land, and it's quite common up here. Just, I believe it was last year, the year before, there were several rivers that were closed to all fishing, period, including game fishing. for contribution purposes.
Hey, I'll please remind folks, if you're not talking, please put yourself on mute. We're getting a little bit of feedback. There we go. Thank you.
Go ahead. Can you still hear me?
I can.
So, for me, in terms of closing rivers for conservation purposes, if the results are beneficial to the fish, I have no problem with that. And I think that's all I have to say tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Norm. Let's see. Marlisa, I see your hands raised. We'll get to you. I want to make sure and let every advisor get a chance to talk. And then if we have time left, we'll come back through for some more general conversation. So I have Bob and Greg are the last two. Bob, you got anything?
Yeah, I've got quite a bit. You hear me, Chad?
Yeah, just a second. Go ahead.
Because I've been muted and unmuted and back and forth like a yo-yo. But first of all, I think I got to agree with Andy. And every time we need a curtailment someplace, it's always coming out of the commercial side. And I think that's not the proper way to do things. And also, what Norm was talking about, this virus we've got, and I requested this the other night in the Grays Harbor meeting, that if in fact something like this, God forbid, happens, that, you know, there won't be any recreational fishing, I think we need to roll some of those numbers over and let the commercial fishery go. And it would not only help to eliminate the terrible surpluses at the hatchery, but also put some money back into the economy of Pacific County, which is definitely hurting big time. And also, I'd like to comment on the November season. If we are close on the wire on chum, I would recommend that we do not fish the first week in November for coho, so we don't hurt the chum anymore. And I don't quite understand where everybody that pushed for the 14% at that commission meeting is now wondering what the hell happened. Well, if they had been paying attention, we tried to explain it to everybody and nobody wanted to listen. So this is the boat we're in now. So we're trying to divvy up one fish, basically, is how it happened, when there was no need for it. If people would have maybe had a little more open mind and generate fisheries for everybody, would make a whole lot more sense to me. But like Andy said, hey, the rec side don't want us on the water. Well, if it wasn't for the commercials, you wouldn't have no hatcheries in the damn Willapa at all. We're the ones who have been fighting to keep them open all these years. So remember that. But like I say, I would appreciate it, Chad, if you guys can put something in front of the commission to turn around and let us, you know, if something happens where the wrecks can't fish at all, that we can turn around and harvest some of these fish when the fish are there. So that's about all I got to say. So thank you.
Hey, thanks, Bob. We got one more. Greg, why don't you go ahead?
How about it? You hear me?
I can hear you, bud.
All right. Thank you. I will say that we're trying to get to the meat of this conversation. I do feel like the November fishery, commercial fishery, should probably be taken out because it will be taken out in November. So that will end that controversy. But you know, I'd also like to say, you know, if we're all wrong, which we'll probably we would see it before that, as far as with your predictions, maybe we could look at opening it, you know, if the fish come back. Seems like we have a hard time with coho, you know, getting that prediction just right. So I'd like to leave that open. But as of now, the modeling, I think it should be modeled closed, because we are close on our coho numbers. Secondly, I would like to see, I guess I'm confused because I thought with the guidance that was given by the commission that we were not bound by days or dates anymore. And as our, you know, with this year and as last year, I'm confused that I thought in the modeling process or the models that actually there's less impacts for the commercial fishery earlier, you know, towards the end of August, you know, before Labor Day. And I'm confused why we're not trying to get at some of these surplus sand, Chinooks at that time where we have less impact. And, you know, and trying to get, I mean, because, you know, it just seems like we have a lot of, you know, we're going to have a big surplus. And then, you know, I guess I agree with Norm with one thing that he said. And I agree if there's going to be this buffer zone or this buffer, you know, that keeps getting talked about, it needs to be spread through both fisheries. And, you know, I just find it hard. It just, it's hard for me to wrap my mind around supporting a model. I mean, every model that we have shows the recreational fishery catching more, and I'm trying to figure out why on the Chinook, and I'm trying to figure out why that each fish the commercial catch is gutting the bay. And maybe you could help me understand that, because I don't understand why a fish in a bay is gutting a resource, but a fish in the river that's harvested is not. So maybe you could help me, you know, maybe I missed something somewhere. But getting back, I would like to see, you know, coho is a problem. So let's cut that November fishery. We have surplus Chinooks. We need to... I would like to see some of those days shifted into meaningful areas like 2M. You know, I don't want to see days. To me, it's ridiculous to put a day, you know, and ends, or, you know, you can fill the week up with ends, but, you know, and it doesn't do any good. And that being said, too, is those models you have, I'd like to see the 2U, be fully, you know, go at it with them. I mean, it looks like to me the models, one of them was 9.6. I mean, that's ridiculous. Let's get back. Let's get that up to 14%, you know, 14%, because that could probably make a lot of days in 2U for a tangle net fishery, you know. So I'd like to see that maximized just for the simple fact is, you know, it to me, it's a wasted, you know, there's no sense in wasting fish that can be caught, because that's what this policy says, 14%. That's what we're managing to. So I think that's about it. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Greg. I see we got a couple advisors who've got their hands up and would like to talk. I'll just remind folks at 7:45 for those that are attendees, we will go to public comment. For those of you who would like to speak, if you could go ahead and raise your hand, and maybe Dana, you can talk them through really quick the raise the hand or how to do it on your phone. But I will go to Marlisa here first and then Tim. Go ahead, Marlisa. I think you may be on mute.
Can you hear me now, Jeff?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. I'll try to be brief. I would like to clarify, I'd like you to help clarify, that fresh water uses 0.4% for there to execute a two fish bag all season long. Is that true?
Excuse me, what was that?
Fresh water uses 0.4% of an impact to execute their season.
For what are you talking about for?
So when we're talking about impacts used by the different user groups, the commercial group, the marine rec users, and freshwater, that most of the impacts are utilized by the commercial group to execute a season.
Are you talking about hatchery fish or wild fish?
Wild fish.
In the two fish bag, the overall rec impact rate against is 7.1 here in Australia. I'm going to show it on the screen so you can see.
Are these new numbers?
No, these are the numbers right here in the model. You can see them right here. Hold on, I'm sharing it. This is model B right here. This is the total. If you can see on your screen, I know you can. I'm sorry, Marlisa, but the total recreational catch, 206. Those would be impacts against wild Chinook. The overall harvest rate is 7.1. These are expressed as decimal. They're not put in percentages here, so you gotta move the decimal.
Okay. And what is the percentage rate for the commercials on that, on their rate of fishery? How many impacts? What's their percent?
5.1. The recs are at 7.1. The commercials are 5.1. Now that's against Willapa Bay Chinook in the aggregate. If we look at Cecil, or if we look at Willapa specific, Willapa River, North River stock, the recreational harvest rate is 7.2, 6.1 in the marine area, and 1% in the freshwater.
I think we're talking apples and oranges here. So when you craft your season on our available impacts, how many impacts do we allocate to the commercial sector in order to craft their season?
In this model, they would, in model B, they would impact 149, and the recreational sector would impact 206.
And this is rec marine is 806?
200. Total recreational catch is 206. Okay. That would be the impacts. The commercial sector is 109.
Okay. So, all right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Let me pull up my participants again. I think, Tim, you had your hand raised. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to end with some comments. Your discussion with Ross about the department's interpretation of the policy is challenged. We've done this before. Just now you talked when we started the meeting about how your interpretation was wrong. It's wrong again. Escapement is part of it. An upward cycle is part of the policy. Managing for conservation first is part of the policy, and you find three management objectives and you've eliminated the entire policy in doing so. Secondly, when it comes to bringing impacts from one side to the other, I've always found that most of the recs would probably say, if we got to go down to a one-bag limit or we got to hang up our poles, I guess we have to do it. There's a lot of them that feel that way. But that does not mean they want to quit fishing and lose their fish so they can transfer it into a couple bucks of excess value for the commercial fleet. That is irritating to them, and I can understand why. So when it comes to the coronavirus thing, we don't know where we're going. We have to set a season assuming we're going to fish. If we don't fish, my position is you don't move a single one of those impacts to the commercial side. If the rec's got to give them up, let them give them to the gravel. Give them to conservation. If they have to give up their fisheries and take nothing, then I don't think that the commercial fleet led by the department should discredit that hardship that they have to go through. Eliminating someone's entire season for the purpose or the net gain of the other side is the type of things that create these allocation battles. I don't have a banded gillnet t-shirt. I don't have a problem with commercial fishing in Willapa. The problem with it is the rate of impacts on the norms that is applied by a net versus a pole. And sometimes, especially when you get really tight on fish, he who is the most selective, he who fishes on hatchery fish with the least impacts on Norris is going to come out ahead of the other guy. Well, that's just the way it is. When you the competition is who can catch the fish and not damage nature. I don't know how much more simpler it can be. To me, it is not trying to steal fish from one place or the other, one side or the other. It's to try to catch the fish with the least amount of harm with the highest conservation standard. With that, I mute myself. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim, for that comment. I see, Greg, you've got your hand raised. Just 1 second. Dana, if you want to go ahead and walk everybody through real quick, I'll stop sharing how they can, how attendees can raise their hands so we can quickly public comment. And then Greg, we'll get to you. Just 1 second, bud.
Sure. Thanks, Chad. So for attendees, what you see on the screen is actually the print screen of the Zoom dashboard. And we will take public comment by raising your hand. So if you are on your computer, you should have on the black dashboard of Zoom, you should have that raise hand icon. Please go ahead and raise your hand already, and we will make sure to unmute you when it is your time to talk. And then for those of you on the phone, you should press *9 to indicate that you want to talk, and we will read out the last 4 digits of your number to let you know that you can talk. And also, when we unmute your line, also make sure that you are not muted on your phone or on your computer. If you are on your computer, you should press on the dashboard. You have that left icon with the microphone icon. You should press on that and just make sure that you are unmuted. And then for those of you on the phone, to unmute your line, you should press *6. So for attendees, you can already go ahead and raise your hand for those of you who want to provide public comment. And in the meantime, Chad, I will turn it over to you for the rest of the conversation.
Thank you, Dana. And like Dana just mentioned, if you are an attendee and you would like to provide public comment, please go ahead and raise your hand so we can kind of get an idea of how many people would like to provide some comments or fishery suggestions tonight. So I see Greg, you've got your hand raised. Go ahead, bud.
Hey, thanks on that. I appreciate it, figuring this out. A quick question. On the harvest rate, you said that I thought you said the recreational was at 7.1%. Is that consistent on what the other years have been ran by? With that rate?
No, actually this rate is not the same that was used as last rate. We've got another year's worth of data. So we're able to add in, for instance, for the freshwater fishery, 2018 CRC data, which allows us with the finalized run reconstruction information for 2018 to be able to add 18 harvest rates for the recreational freshwater. For the recreational marine, because we do utilize, we have a robust creel where we estimate recreational catch in season and effort. This model also includes 2019 data for the recreational marine fishery. And that's the same. So the same number of years goes into the commercial harvest rates and the recreational marine harvest rates. That would be 15 through 19 for the freshwater. Because we utilize CRC to monitor that fishery, we're a year behind. Those rates are generated from 15 through 18 data.
Okay, that being said, so in other words, I think what I'm getting is their rate has gone up, their harvest rate has gone up. Is that correct from last year?
You know, I don't know that off the top of my head. In fact, but I would guess, given the recreational catch that happened in 19 in the marine area, plus the 18 freshwater catch, not good years. Those harvest rates more than likely went down.
Okay.
Lower data point. Yeah.
Okay. Was our the commercial harvest rate adjusted as well with the gear that we are using and everything like that? Is that taken into consideration?
Yep.
And our time taken away, our days lost, you know. Okay. Well, I just was wondering because I feel like that, you know, because their numbers may have increased and our numbers went down, and let's be honest, last year I think a lot of our numbers went down is because we, the commercial fishery, was trying to get escapement up the river. We had this conversation because we felt like that they were going to go to 5 million fish. So we forgo a lot of, days and because we had more fish to catch. And I hope that has getting captured somewhere in there, but I think it's not because I feel like now it's coming out of us because we didn't catch our fish. If you understand what I'm saying. And I feel like that, so thank you.
Yep. No, I hear you, Greg. That is not the case. Your harvest rates that we're using in 15 through 19 are based on the actual outcome of the fishery in terms of finalized run reconstructions and harvest that occurred in those specific years. They would be inclusive of the use of tangle nets. They're also inclusive of the reduced effort that we've seen over these last 4 years as well. So, and I think I had another advisor. Yeah, Lance, you got your hand raised. Go ahead, and I'll just remind folks we got about 10 minutes here. And then 10 minutes here.
Nope, am I up?
Yep.
I never know if I got what I got going on. So. I just had one more comment, and it doesn't really have to do with models or anything like that. We talk a lot about credibility from the state and working with the public. One thing I would like to see in our pamphlet or our brochure that we put out, we've done a lot of work to change the fishery, like in an ACEL and an ANEMA in the upper areas, to try to limit the illegal or unruly, as we call it, because it sounds terribly illegally, but unruly fishery. And I think that we've lost a lot of credibility, as the state has, from the landowners and the people that are the, you know, the keepers of the property that the fishermen are on. And given the fact that we're going to have some pretty robust surpluses in both the NACEL and the NEMA, it looks like, I would like to see us put forth in our pamphlet that the fisheries above the bridges be a hatchery surplus takeout, and that way, I'm not sure exactly how you would word it, but it doesn't matter basically how you catch that fish. And that way our landowners can't be upset about how that fish was caught or how it was taken. And our officers don't have to spend their days sitting down there trying to catch people snagging fish or unruly fishing, I'll call it. I'd like to see that adjustment in our pamphlet, because I look at the amount of surplus that we're getting now and what we're going to receive in the future is going to be, I think you have to really stop and look at what it's going to do to what natural fish you are going to have there. I don't think I'm going too far down on a limb to say that most of those fish are going to die and most of those natural fish are going to die in the conditions we have there. So I just think it's time to change those things and word that in such a way that the landowners don't have to be upset about what they're seeing, and the fisheries department doesn't have to dedicate 7 days a week and two officers to those areas to try to patrol them. So thank you.
No, and Lance, just want to check in real quick to make sure I got this. And so is your suggestion then to eliminate the anti-snagging and selective gear rule information in some of those sections? That would be
correct, Chad. I think it would be, I think it's what goes on in most of those areas now, and it's been brought to this department's attention by many landowners, by many recreational fishermen. And I don't think it, I think it's gotten to the point where it just goes on and we just accept it. So I think it's time to accept it. And it's time to look at what we really are going to have. I mean, you can't have 10,000 fish in an A cell, or you're going to end up with all of them dead. You're not going to get any escapement for your hatchery. You're not going to get any natural escapement. You're going to be back to 2015 where most of those fish are going to die. And I don't think as we go forward and we do 5 million fish escapement, you know, it's going to be more like 25,000 fish in that river. It just can't handle it. So I think it's time we ramp up a surplus hatchery fishery there. And otherwise, we're going to lose everything.
Hey, Chad, this is Bob.
Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
I got a couple things. Reminder, this year is the first year we have a return off a 2.5 million release out of the nacelle hatchery. Last year's return was a return off 800,000. And I got to say, I totally disagree with what Lance just said about the snagging. That's absolutely ludicrous. And I mean, it just, maybe we had to bring pause into it. My God, it just absolutely ludicrous to turn around, open up the snagging. You think the landowners are upset now? I know a few of them would go nuts. So it just, you know, I don't think we want to even approach that idea. So, but that's all I had to say. But I'm, like I say, the reminder, this is the first year we have a return on a 2.5 million Chinook release. So on the nacelle side, but on the other hand, on the Forks Creek side or Willapaw side, we are got a return off of 350,000, which is nil. So that's about all I got to say. Thank you.
Thanks for that, Bob. Just remind folks, we will be going to public comment here in just a minute. So I see Ross, if you can be brief, and Marlisa, we can get you both in here before we move on to public comment. Go ahead, Ross.
Fishing, and so I'll be brief. I guess we had to have our bicentennial minute where we talk about unruly fishing. I would not want to legalize snagging. I think it's uncontrollable, but what we've done with the bobber rule and things like that in the nacelle is we've just made it harder and harder to catch a fish. There are places where bobbers don't work and places where they do. There's places where you use a spinner. And so I would suggest that part way into what Lance would say, that we legalize normal techniques of fishing. You still ought to use a single hook because you don't want to snag anything by accident. But we ought to get rid of the bobber rule and some of these things that we got to stand on your head to catch a fish when the river is full of fish. The other comment is we need to do something about unruly netting, violating the gill net rules. You can go in Main Street in South Bend and see it anytime there's netting going on. I don't know how we should believe that that doesn't go on out in the Stanley Channel where you can't see it. And we really need to enhance enforcement. And I've talked to Mr. Lake before. Hopefully you all can internally do that. But set netting and nets longer than 3/4 of the width of the channel has just got to stop. Or who believes that you need to follow rules? I think we should follow rules. I think they need to be a little more reasonable when it comes to a bobber. I hope and pray that this year's forecast for hatchery returns is accurate. I have my doubts. I hope it is. But we ought to be able to fish in a reasonable manner to catch them. And thank you.
Thank you, Ross. Go ahead, Marlisa, if you can be brief, then we'll turn it over to public comment. Andy, I see your hands raised. If we have time, after we turn it over to the public, I'll get to you. Go ahead, Marlisa.
One thing that we have suggested in years past and have entertained, similar to Alaska and some options in Canada, is a dip net fishery that is a mid-season option if and when surplus hatchery fish arrive, and if the river on a river by river basis. So The nacelle and the NEMA in 2020 might be an option for that. And I would certainly support that kind of an option. You know, it could be 2 days a week that there's a dip net option to try to remove excess fish, you know, hatchery chinook out of the river or hatchery coho if it became a problem. And I kind of like that. I'll mute myself.
Thank you, Marlisa. I see your hands raised, Andy. We're going to go to the public here real quick because it's that time on the agenda. But if there is time after they speak, then we'll I'll come back to you. So, Dana, I see Alan Hollingsworth his hand. If there's any other members of the public, please, that would like to talk, please raise your hand. Go ahead, Alan. Wait till Dana unmutes you.
And Alan, I will unmute you, but also make sure that you are unmuted on your computer as well. So you may be able to speak now.
Can you hear me now?
Go ahead, Alan. Oh, you just muted yourself.
How about now?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Okay. I want to read on page 7 of the Willapaw Plan under two sentences here on the coho. It says, prioritize commercial fishing opportunity during the coho fishery management period, September 16th through October 14th, and provide recreational fishing opportunities. So that's, I haven't heard that mentioned tonight. So anyway, I might think of something later. So that's it for now.
Hey, thank you, Alan. I see we got John Campbell, Lisa Olson, Ryan Johnson, JS. Any of you folks want to get anything on the record? Now's your time. Okay, we'll keep an eye out and see if any of those folks raise their hand. Go ahead, Andy. We've got a few minutes left here.
Well, I would just like to reiterate, I think what Greg said, you know, we have commission guidance here this year. So that's what we're working with. Whatever model you go with, if all boxes check green, that's where we're at. But I think Lance had a pretty good point there. Well, why are we going to surplus all these fish? I would, at least in the NEMA, I mean, I think once they get up there, I think the NEMA should probably go to a 6-fish bag recreationally. And if there is a surplus, I like Marlise's idea. I think the dip net is great, and I think we should commercially go up there and dip net them. So I think that's a viable deal. We see that there's surplus, and we can go up there and dip net them and have them cart them off in a garbage can. I would promote that for recreational and commercial use. That's what I got.
Okay, thanks, Andy. Any other advisors, attendees? Not seeing any hands raised. Okay, well, I think we'll go ahead and call it. Thank you all for your input. Really appreciate it. Oh, I see Tim. Go ahead. We got a few minutes left here. Tim, go ahead.
I wanted to comment on dip netting in freshwater or for recreational purposes, and that is forbid by RCWs. So the place we'd have to go for the department to be able to recognize or, you know, consider that is back and change the state law. So that's one point I'd put that. And again, the harvest rates say shall not exceed. That doesn't mean that we're going to continue on as we've done in the past to accept the harvest rate not as a maximum cap, but rather a minimum floor. That is how you get the problems we have today. And one last point is, we asked some time ago when they raised the egg take goal and release goal from 800,000 in the nacelle to first 2.5 and now 5 million. We can find nothing that suggests that you can support that amount of fish. We recognize that there's a certain limitation in commercial, and the limitation in commercial is how many gnaws can you kill? The biggest problem we have is the lack of gnaws, and until we get the hatcheries balanced with the gnaws and restore the gnaws, it is going to put a horrific crimp on the commercial fishing. I don't believe it's possible under state law or policy to say we're going back to eliminating natural spawning and we're going to create a hatchery net pen in Willapaw Bay, which they did for years. Those days are gone. I don't believe they will return. And I think that I want to compliment what I heard from Lance. I've watched this, and I thought that was his commentary was reasonable. It's realistic, and it attempted to be fair. And I never thought I'd probably say this, but I do believe that Lance may have the track to take. But that's up to the department. At the end of the day, the days when a few individuals set the season out of sight of the public are over forever. This is the department's job. It's responsible for its modeling, and it's responsible for the end result. And it should not feel offended when we try to hold them accountable for their actions. With that, I thank you. Good night.
Hi, this is Norm.
Yeah, thanks for that, Tim. I see, Norm, you got your hand raised. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Norm. You know, the dead netting thing, I'm sitting here laughing because several years ago, Hood Canal Bio suggested that as a viable option for a hatchery surplus. I suggested it several years ago down in Nacelle, and got crucified on some of the blog pages. But I think Lance makes a very valid point. If we're going to have all these surplus fish coming back to the hatcheries, they need to be harvested. Now, whether that harvest is through a dip net or a regulated snag fishery, I can fully support that. I've already talked with Puget Sound in that what's wrong with having a snag permit or a snag tag, whatever you want to call it, where it's highly regulated. That fishery is already occurring all over this state. Go to any river and you can watch it. Why not monetize it? Why not get these hatchery surplus fish out of the river? Otherwise, I can only see one other way to approach Tim's comment about balancing the norms, and that's reducing hatchery production. And I don't think any of us want to do that. So let's figure out a way to get these surplus fish out of the river. And as far as Andy talking about a commercial permit, I wouldn't have a problem supporting that either. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Norm. It looks like, okay, if nobody else has any comment, I want to check in with the public one more time. Last chance, going once, going twice.
Hey, one more from an advisor.
Okay, go ahead, Francis.
Just because these alternative fisheries have popped up for reducing PHAS.
I'm
in favor of anything that reduces.
Mark Downing.
I'm in favor of anything that reduces PHAS to the extent that it doesn't harm wild fish. And a dip net fishery can be extremely selective with very little handle apart from getting the fish in the net, seeing it has a fin, and rolling it out of the net. You don't even have to touch it. But a snag fishery, unfortunately, is extremely damaging to wild fish, particularly wild hens. You belly up a hen, and it's very easy to do. Their energy, their body energy is 100% devoted to creating eggs, okay, and making those eggs big. Their belly walls are paper thin, right behind the pectoral fin. I could probably poke my finger into one, okay? But as soon as you poke a hook through there, set the hook, rip that thing open, and then fight that fish, the whole time it's struggling, you have water entry into the peritoneal cavity. You're water hardening those eggs. That fish may escape. You may take it off your hook. It may swim away. But those eggs are useless to the spawning escapement. That is empty escapement. And I would not support any snag fishery when you have this critical level of wild return. So I got a great way to snag fish. I suggested it before. I'd love to talk to enforcement about it in great detail. We've been legitimately snagging sockeye salmon on the Kenai River, extracting them on the order of 500,000 fish per year. And the way to do it without harming the fish is snagging them with a circle hook. They all snag in the mouth. I think it could be adapted. It would just take some trust on the part of users, some education on the part of enforcement, but it does have tremendous potential to hook and line, remove hatchery fish without harming wild fish. So I would be supporting in great support of something like that. I'd be happy to provide all kinds of literature. I don't have scientific studies for you. I can only give you what I've observed over the past. I think we're on season 10 this year on the Kenai River doing this, and it works great, okay? But so does the dip net. They extract upwards of 1 million fish out of the Kenai River with dip netting. It's a very viable way of conducting that fishery. Okay, that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Francis. Go ahead, Marlisa. We got 2 minutes.
Thank you very much. Is there any way that we can expedite a possible dip net fishery through with assistance from the department as a trial alternative freshwater fishery in 2020? Can you foresee that happening?
No. Quite frankly, what Tim said is true. Dip nets are not viable fishing gear. Through RCW, this is a change that has to happen at the legislative level.
Even though our policy in one of the paragraphs says that we are to actively pursue alternative fishing methods?
That doesn't supersede state law, just from the commission.
Okay, so you think there's zero chance of getting that to go through?
I would think it's very unlikely given what would need to happen. My understanding is that the legislature has to do that. There are avenues for experimental or emerging alternative gear types, but would have to go through a whole rulemaking process, a 101, 102, 103. I think it's highly unlikely for 2020 that we could get all that done.
I would like to propose that we do that with a rulemaking process and start with 101 and see if you can't get that out within a couple of days. And if it doesn't make it, then at least we made a try. And with that, I'm going to mute myself. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for that. This is James here. I just also say we went for a last-ditch effort in Hood Canal, as Norm described, and we also did it at Mentor Creek last year and did some pretty extensive planning. And, we didn't investigate the RCW. Rather, we just considered this as a viable opportunity. And we didn't get anywhere close to the finish line due to issues with how we'd enforce it, how we deal with landowners, and just what the general behavior of a dip net fishery would look like, if it would provide opportunity for very few individuals. And so there was a whole host of things that I think could probably be figured out, but not in the timeline that we have now. So I would just agree with Chad, and just the chance of it is slim, but I'd say we should write it down and go chat with Ron and others about it.
I think we should do more than that. So I'll reach out to you after the meeting. Thank you.
Great. Thanks.
Okay, everybody. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate your input. Appreciate you being able to jump on here in short notice. And we'll keep you guys apprised as I move through the rest of PFMC week on things that come up. So keep an eye on your email. I doubt we will have another advisory group meeting, but I will be sending out updates, relevant updates as we move through the week. So thank you all, and have a good evening.